This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh, and the morning run begins. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock today at the 25th of January 2018. Joyce, we're going to begin with some sort of news that you might have missed if you were sleeping, not just you, but everybody else. Two monkeys have been cloned using the technique that produced Dolly the Sheep. If you remember Dolly the Sheep, many years ago, I think it was British scientists who produced Dolly, cloning. These are Chinese scientists. But critics are saying that the work raises ethical concerns because it's bringing us closer to a world where human cloning is going to be possible.
Well, yeah. And is Dolly the Sheep still alive?
I believe she's passed away. And we looked it up before we went on air. She died in 2003. Okay. She lived, 8 years.
8 years.
So slightly shorter than the average lifespan of a sheep.
Yeah, that's like 13 years?
10 to 12, yeah, right. Okay. So here, and if you look at the pictures on the website of the two monkeys, the monkey that was cloned is called Chang Chang. He's very, very cute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for us who don't want to get married but who want to be reproductive, maybe this is an answer, you know?
Cloning?
Clone yourself.
Okay.
Clone yourself. What better way?
Okay. Mini Sharad running around, huh?
Yeah. Mm. I think that would be Mini Sharad is the word. Now, veteran U.S. Diplomat Bill Richardson has resigned from an international panel set up by Myanmar to advise them on the Rohingya crisis. He says he's lost faith in Aung San Suu Kyi, says that she lacks moral leadership.
Okay.
And this is because damning, especially at the time when there are plans to repatriate those over 500,000 Rohingya refugees from Bangladesh back into Myanmar. A lot of concern that that perhaps things are not put in place yet. Mm. So if you can imagine, you know, all these people who've been brutalized, they've been raped, or they have been had loved ones murdered, and they're now going to be sent back. And it's very unclear what they're going to be sent back to.
Next up, we also have news on the UK charity Save the Children. It has been suspended temporarily for its program in Afghanistan after an attack on its offices in the city of Jalalabad.
Yeah, so they lost a couple of their staff, and I think also a soldier was killed in this attack by the Taliban. And, it's because it might strike us as extraordinary thinking when you think about, charities like Save the Children and what they seek to do, right?
Yes.
Very sad news, but that is a country at war at the moment. Now, also in the news, Joyce, a singer Neil Diamond, somewhat before your time, I think, has announced that he will retire from touring after a recent diagnosis for Parkinson's. Neil Diamond is 77 years old at this point in time. Oh. Do your parents listen to Neil Diamond?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They do. They did, yeah.
Yeah.
And, brilliant. He had a brilliant duo with Barbara Streisand, if you remember. But that would take us back so many decades. I don't know if one cares to go back that far in time. But just to give you a flavor, if you haven't heard Neil Diamond, this is Neil Diamond with Song Sang Blue. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Neil Diamond with Song Sang Blue. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh. Because we mentioned earlier that Neil Diamond was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And maybe, the fact that he's a celebrity, again, will raise the profile of that disease.
Yeah, raise awareness.
And also how much research is going into finding a cure for this terrible scourge. Mm. Old age should be, I think, full of joy. And I think Parkinson's as a disease often robs people of that.
Yeah. Didn't Michael J. Fox had that also? Parkinson? Was it
Yes,
Michael
I
J.
believe
Fox?
So, yeah. Yeah. Quite a number of people who are kind of well-known globally and also through popular culture, who've been diagnosed. I believe Muhammad Ali as well had Parkinson's. We don't know to what extent boxing was responsible because, so many blows to the head. Talking about life and what we should do and our attitudes towards it, there was an opinion piece in Malaysia Kini by someone called Fa Abdul, who argues that there's nothing wrong with being lazy or content with a simple life.
Yeah, so often we hear people chanting about the need to live up to one's full potential, but what's wrong with, you know, just having enough and being happy with basics of life? Basically, I think it boils down to contentment.
Yeah, I think contentment so? is the right word, right? So it's not about being lazy, but yeah. I guess perhaps in an industrialized world, the idea of being productive,
efficient, doing as much as you can.
You know, milking your potential for all it's worth, often measured in very, very simple terms, mm-hmm. right? How many assets and the value of the assets that you accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it that we're telling our children? You have kids. Mm. I mean, what is it that you want for them as a mother, Joyce?
Well, happiness. As long as they're happy, for me, I think that's important. Basically for me, happiness and health. Right,
but how would you measure it? I mean, isn't that one of the great difficulties?
Yeah, it's very subjective. It really depends on the person. It boils down to contentment again, because different people want different things, right? And sometimes it's never enough. If you keep chasing it, it's like, what, keeping up with the Joneses, you know? Yeah. If you keep upgrading your car and all that, it's never going to be enough. So it depends on what you want in life, I guess. It's different people want different, even like married. Some people want to get married. Some people like to be single. Some people want like 10 kids. Some people just want one.
Yeah. You know? What about people who kind of, you know, I think to some extent we all internalize the values of our parents, right? So the little voice in our head that tells us, you know, we're satisfied or not satisfied or we should strive harder comes from our parents. They set the bar for us in some respects. And I think there's a very interesting dynamic between kids and parents is that sometimes overachieving parents, and I use that word, that phrase advisedly, mm-hmm. overachieving parents produce underachieving children. You know, the children of very successful individuals don't always go on to mimic their parents in the kind of one-to-one fashion, do they?
Mm-hmm. So it depends on the individual as well. You can try and push the child, but if the child doesn't want to do it, you know, they'll have a mind of their own. Even like coming back to getting married and not. Some parents, they want their kids to get married and like faster get married lah. You know, when you're going to pop the question. But then some of them, they're just happy being single. So what's wrong with that?
So the question is, for a lot of parents, the anxiety would be that unless you instill these values in your kids, they're going to lose their way in life, right? They're not going to be able to stand on their own two feet. And I think that structure of speech and those attitudes are also there in politicians and leaders. They're always, and especially in developing countries, you know, you have, if you remember the days of Dr. Mahathir, but I think even going back to Tunku Abdul Rahman and all those early leaders, the idea was, you know, we're a modernizing nation, and being modern was about being industrial, right?
Yeah, being productive, efficient, and climbing the ladder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, parents play a big role, of course, but family members as well, and also role models that the kids look up to. Eventually, I feel it boils down to the individual as well, what they want in life.
Right. Yeah. So we have some words of wisdom here from Bill Gates, who once said, "I choose a lazy person to do a hard job because a lazy person will find an easy way to do it."
A lazy or smart person? I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it, right?
Yeah. Because a lazy person might not even want to do the job at all. So maybe it's just a smart person who just want to get it done faster.
But so what is it about a lazy people that he finds so compelling and needed to kind of use a lazy person as a way of talking about this? That laziness is a particular kind of attitude of wanting to minimize work, say, for instance.
It's nothing to do with lazy. Yeah, exactly, right? So maybe it's just a label that people use. But in this op-ed, I think what he's saying is, what the writer's trying to say is there's nothing wrong with being lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but that goes against the grain, right, in Malaysia, where for decades now we've been, you know, push to want to strive. And this is so much about, you know, the material values that we have.
Mm.
Fascinating stuff. If you have an opinion on this question, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Remember, add your name, or you can follow us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was the late Prince and a Raspberry Beret. I'm sure I couldn't with me, Joyce Go. Just a quick note, time is really passing. Prince has passed away in April 21st, 2016.
Mm.
So it's coming up to two years. Such an incredible talent.
Yes.
Too early, I think. That's what you say. Okay, now the customer experience, that's a big buzzword today. Amazon.com Inc. opened its checkout-free grocery store to the public earlier this week. The question is this going to, would this something like this work? But tell us, Joyce, you know some details about this.
Yeah, sure.
This new grocery store.
So this is in Seattle. Mm-hmm. It's known as Amazon Go, and it relies on cameras and sensors to track what shoppers remove from the shelves and what they put back. So, you know, cash registers and checkout lines become unnecessary, and customers are billed after leaving the store using credit cards on file. So basically, I think Amazon is looking to eliminate the lines, you know, the queues when you go shopping, especially on weekends.
And maybe peak counter period. Staff yeah, as well.
Cost to that. Yeah, so how it works is you start shopping. Before, you have to scan an Amazon Go smartphone app and pass through like a gated thing, right? And from there, you can pick up stuff that you want. And if you want to go to the alcohol section, the Amazon employee will check your ID. But aside from that, no, you can just go to the shelves and pick up whatever you want. And then you just pass through the gate again, and then you'll be charged.
Okay, so in this, you know, when you have systems like this that don't have humans monitoring it, there's always a concern that people will not follow the rules, and that to some extent, you know, you have to follow the rules in order for the system. The system is sort of predicated on people following the rules. Mm. Now, you know, have they, you know, worked out the bugs? What do you have if people go crazy or they don't follow the rules?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure when it comes to if it ever will come to Malaysia. But right now in the US, one reporter in CNBC, she accidentally shoplifted. As in, like, she took some things and walked out. And when she checked her bill, when she checked it, she was not charged for yogurt or something. One item was not charged.
But was that her fault? Was it the fault of the system?
Yeah, it was the system. And then she tweeted about it, and Amazon actually replied and said, oh, the yogurt is on us. So that's a good comeback from
Amazon. But yes. But there must be some bug in the system,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there is. I think so. But so basically, they're relying on cameras and sensors to track what shoppers are removing from the shelves. And from that, it's a lot of tech involved, and they're testing it out. Before it was open to public, it was just to Amazon staff. And just this week, on Monday, they opened it to public, and they're definitely testing it out. So, I mean, there are pros and cons to this, because I think when they tried it out, they found out that it was tough with children, because the children would take things from the shelf and don't put it back at the same place. So that messes up with the system.
Right. Mm. And presumably adults would do that. They would put things back in place.
Now,
have you ever been to a public library, you know that's just not true. But never mind about that. I do think, though, you know, if you think about the customer experience in terms of shopping and retail, I'm 52 now. And I remember the days when we had those corner sundry shops, you know, were called, this is a word that has in fact disappeared, I think, from the Malaysian lexicon, kaka shops. Yeah. So, you know, we talk about mama. Because mama is related to the Indian Muslim community. Uh-huh. Kakas are actually people from Kerala. So Kerala Muslims.
Oh,
or, you know, Malayali Muslims or Kerala Muslims. Right. So, you know, and they used to be those kinds of
Runchit, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there was the 555 book for keeping accounts.
Yes.
There was all kinds of personal connections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the people who manned the stores.
Yeah, the storekeeper would know you and your whole family and, like, ask about your mom and your dad. Yeah. In Penang, in Hokkien, we call it Chai Tema.
What does that mean?
The Kedai Runcit. It's a small, I remember going, and the candies and the biscuits, the old school biscuits.
All the tikam-tikam that they used to have. Right?
That's right.
But all that, I guess, you know, is part of the, in some ways, it's fading away, right? But what have we lost in the process? You know, and every step that we take, it does seem that the experience, the customer experience, is getting increasingly depersonalized.
Yeah, and less human touch, less human interaction, right? Because now you just go in, you go pick it up, and that's it. You don't, you know, sometimes you go to a shopping mall, there's someone there to, oh, we have this new milk, you want to try this. You know, there's a bit more interaction there.
Yeah, a little bit more, but I know our standards of human interaction have dropped so dramatically.
That's true.
You know, once they knew who you were and the family and some background and you knew each other. Now, you know, if they just offer you a free sample, that's almost like
human interaction, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Taking us up to the first bulletin of the morning, we have the Postal Service. Well, another disappearing, profession. The Postal Service is actually the name of the band. Such Great Height. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Pretenders with The Talk of the Town. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Joyce Goh. Taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. It is the 25th of January 2018, and it's coming up to 40 minutes after 6. Well, still a minute away. But thank you very much, Mr. Tan, for your WhatsApp message. We were talking about laziness
earlier. Yes, being lazy.
Being all content. And this is what Mr. Tan had to say, that most of us don't have the luxury to do the minimum and be content with that. Being lazy by choice on the pretext of a simpler life is a unsustainable option. Wow. Okay, so that's, you know, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Yes,
Interesting way of looking at it. Talking about ways of looking at things, some people say that people who lead the country are rather thin-skinned, you know, and someone unlikely voice to counter this is, in fact, Tourism and Culture Minister Dato Sri Nasri Aziz, always seen as a bit of a maverick, isn't he? He believes artists and cartoonists in the country should be free to draw and criticise politicians. And he says that politicians, as public figures, must learn to take criticism from the rakyat in various forms.
Kita kena ingat sekarang, kita telah keluar daripada zaman yang dulunya konservatif. Bila you dah jadi ahli politik, you are subject to criticism. Actually, it's a message. Message given in a very subtle way. If you are very sensitive, you got no business to be in politics. If you choose not to be criticized or anything like that, then stay at home then. This is the way forward, and we are moving forward. There's no turning back.
That was Tourism and Culture Minister Dato Sri Nasri Aziz.
Yeah, so he also adds that artists such as Fahmi Reza and Zunar, who have been faced legal charges due to their satire works, right, should continue expressing their opinions through art, although recognizing there are legal limits. And he added that if you are very sensitive, then you have no business in politics as you are a public figure. So I guess at the end of the day, what, there's a line? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, and you know, so this is the key thing turns on the question of legal limits. If you look at even something like the Me Too movement in the US as compared to other countries, often they come up in other countries against a very low threshold when it comes to libel or slander. Mm-hmm. Whereas in, I think, the US, they have a very high threshold, especially for public figures, mm-hmm, or people in the public eye, right? So if the legislation allows individuals as well, you know, whether they're in politics or not, to charge somebody or to accuse somebody of slander and libel, then you have a problem, you know. And also, I think we look to the courts for some sort of direction in this in terms of the threshold.
Yeah, and the minister said he reminded art enthusiasts not to go overboard in expressing their thoughts and to understand that there are limits. And he warned that they need to be careful of being slanderous as Malaysia has laws against slander. So again, you know, that's that line.
Yeah, so people might say, well, he's giving one hand and taking back with the other, mm-hmm, right? It's like saying, yes, you can be free, but you can be free within limits. And the question is, who is setting those limits? Is it the law? Is the law neutral? Mm-hmm. And how have our courts adjudicated cases where the lines were not so clear? You know, and I think it also maybe it comes back to the Attorney General's office and the fact that they have preferred charges against, say, somebody like Zuna, who's a internationally recognized, multi-award-winning editorial cartoonist. And, I mean, he has so many sedition charges against him that if he was found guilty on all of them, he could face up to 40 years or so in jail. And so you think, well, okay, that's the tone that's been set. That's had a chilling effect on freedom of expression in this country.
Yeah, I think recently news on him was he has a suit against the IGP and it's going to be heard over 5 days in April. Yeah, there's a number of suits, as you say.
Yeah. The thing is, of course, then he's taken away from doing the creative work. But then others will say, well, the same applies to politicians. If politicians have to accept that they're going to get some pushback if they've taken up positions in elected office, then so are people who criticize politicians. They're going to have to accept some sort of pushback when they criticize politicians or individuals associated with those politicians.
Yeah, what Dato Sri Nasri is saying here is they shouldn't be sensitive because they're public figures. So, but then again, he also reminds that there's a line. So it's like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah. But what do you think about those, say, the Fahmy Rezas and the Zunas of the world when they've been attacked? Do you think they're being naive to say, well, we shouldn't be attacked and we were just doing, you know, playing our role? I mean, if you're going to get involved in politics from that other side, mm-hmm. from the side of the creatives, as it were, you know, shouldn't you expect some sort of pushback?
Yeah, and whether there's a limit or should we put a cap on self-expression? That's also another question that, that people do raise yeah. as well when it comes to this topic, right?
Yeah. And I think the question of politics in this country, as it is in any country, is a difficult one, right? People are struggling to find those lines.
And the balance.
And the balance. Mm. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Who with My Generation. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh. It's the 25th of January 2018 and we're just at 49 minutes past 6 in the morning. So we're just in the first hour of the morning run. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock. Now, you can be part of this conversation at any point in time by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Remember, put your name there because we can't identify you. And so it'd be great to know who you are. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we can't talk. I mean, we're in that season, Joyce, now. Yes. Everybody's talking about the elections. It's the only season, not the durian season.
Not the Chinese New Year season.
It's not even the Chinese New Year season, right? And that's a very interesting point because some people have said,
we have Taipusam, long weekend coming up.
Yeah, we have
some public holidays.
Well, Taipusam's got midweek,
Wednesday,
isn't it?
Midweek.
And I think KTM's put out some an announcement recently that they're going to be running their trains all night long. Mm. So if you've never been to the Taipusam Festival and you want to catch that, it's an amazing spectacle. It's a bit of a crush, but and the transport is there for you, so you can take KTM. But coming back to the other season that, you know, that we were talking about and it's there in the air, which is the next general election. Nobody knows when it ends. Yeah. It's a kind of a shifting season, right?
Everyone's speculating.
Everybody, you know, do you have your own?
I do.
When do you think it's going to be?
I think it's in March, but I don't know. Some people are telling me that's not anymore, so I don't know.
Yeah.
What are you hearing?
Well, you know, the March thing would be interesting if
end
we were to
keep. March.
Yeah, end of March. If we kept to this electoral roll, what we do know is they've announced the first dates for parliamentary session, and it's going to be in March. Now, to get the, you know, we're doing this redelineation exercise, mm-hmm. or the Election Commission is doing it anyway, to gazette those new borders, constituent borders, that happens in Parliament. So it can only be done in March.
Right.
So when in March will they do that? When would they have to dissolve Parliament in order for actually an election to be called in that same month?
So the timing might be off.
Yeah, so I think March is unlikely.
So wait, when do you think it is?
I don't know. And I think it's unimportant in some ways, you know. What's most important is that we know what we... we understand our own relationship to politics in this country, understand our relationship to the political process and such. And because we have several hashtags now going about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Jangan Undi, no? Tak Undi?
Undi Rosa.
That's
Undi Rosa.
It. Yeah. But we have another one and it's Chaba Chalon. And the person championing it is a journalist, Bu Sulin, former colleague of mine, and who's saying that we don't give our elected representatives enough of a challenge. We don't demand enough of them. We often give them a free pass. And tell us what you think. Do you think that you give your elected representative, if you actually know who they are, a free pass? Remember, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Sulin is going to, or Boo, as she likes to call herself. I think she's got a website. We'll tweet it out. It's called Boo's Breakfast. What is it called? Boo's Breakfast Brew. That's it. Boo's Breakfast Brew. And a bit of a tongue twister there. She's organizing, along with others, a forum to discuss this precise issue.
So this is what hashtag Chabar Chalon, and she's gonna, in her tweet, she says, let's make our GE14 candidates work for us. And she's gonna be on a panel with Siti Kasim and Cynthia Gabriel. So, I mean, what kind of engagement do we have here in Malaysia with our MPs?
That's an interesting question. I mean, first of all, there are still a number of people who don't vote. And those who do vote perhaps are just looking at the symbols, right? Mm-hmm. So you're either voting for the Duching, the scales, mm-hmm. or you're voting for the rocket, yeah. or you're voting for the moon, or you're voting for, you know, the eye. I mean, whatever it is, or the Kerbau, you know, the Parti Socialist Rakyat Malaysia, mm-hmm. and then its successor, Parti Rakyat Malaysia, used to have that bull's head, right? Mm. Now, so people, you know, might not even be looking at the name of the candidate.
Yeah, exactly. They might not even know who is the MP.
Yeah, and that's part of the historical development of our politics, right? People vote on the basis of parties rather than individuals. We've had recent surveys that suggest that people now, especially younger people, don't have those party loyalties. They're more interested in the candidate. Now, if they are...
For the personality. Vote for a personality, okay. is it?
Rather and how do you... I mean, I'm going to ask you... I know your vote is secret, Joyce, but and so is mine. So I'm not asking who you voted for. But do you vote party or do you vote candidate?
Candidate.
You do vote candidate. Mm-hmm. And how do you get to know who that candidate is?
Researcher. But I guess for me, because the candidate is quite out there.
Your particular candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is your candidate?
It depends. I mean, I do not know now. Yeah, yeah, whoever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing because research is important. We journalists often are in a privileged position. Our job requires us to know who these people are. Mm. And so it's already done. It's a done deal, right?
Well, admit that. I don't know how. I mean, I don't engage much with the MP. Do you?
I do only because not my MP, but my Adun.
Okay.
I do because of little things that have upset me, and because he's on Twitter, Rajiv Rishikaran's on Twitter. So it's very easy for me to engage
but
with him.
But that's not related to work. It's your personal.
No, it's my personal thing. Okay. Oh, they cut down some trees. I'm very upset by the tree cutting that's going on in Section 17 PJ. You know, and I say why? And he's been very. He's very responsive. In fact, we have him as a regular guest on one of our BFM shows because he's also very good at communicating. And I think that's one of the big challenges for many of our elected representatives.
Yeah, and with social media now, it's easy to connect if you want to with the voters. And for voters, it's easy to connect with the politicians.
Absolutely. The question is whether politicians really want to connect with the voters as well. But remember, Chaba Calon hashtag. Very interesting. Now, taking us up to the next bulletin is Amy Winehouse with Valerie. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh. The morning run continues at 6 minutes past 7 o'clock in the morning, the 25th of January, 2018. We've been talking about all things political and elections related. We talked about Chaba Calon, a new hashtag.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if it's going to, how far and how much it's going to catch on. But we have others that have also started to really create some heat. One of them is Undi Rosa, hashtag Undi Rosa. And there's also Protest PRU. PRU, of course, is the Malay acronym of Pilihan Raya Umum. Mm.
Yeah, so there's this Undi Rosa that's been going around. There's an opinion ad by Dharam Navaratnam who argues that by choosing not to vote or by choosing to spoil your vote, you're basically saying that you don't care who your elected rep is. By extension, you don't care who forms the government. And if you extend it further, you basically don't care about your country.
And I wonder if that's a fair assessment, because it seems that there are a lot of passions behind the Undi Rosa hashtag and the campaign. It's more like they care so much, they're so emotionally overwrought in some instances, that this is their emotional response. Some people say it's a rational one, but I think it's an emotional response to the politics of the time, as opposed to people who just... When they really don't care, they just don't turn up. They
just won't sleep in. Why wake up so early?
Yeah,
line
they won't
up
even have a campaign, right? They wouldn't organize a campaign. Mm. And I think that seems to be what's driving this. A lot of political passions are driving the Undi Rosa hashtag. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a lot of, conspiracy theories around this.
Yeah?
Some people are saying it's coming from people who are formerly Pakatan supporters. Others are saying it's coming from the Barisan National Quarters because, in fact...
Why would that be?
Yeah, because spoiling a vote and not participating actually would be to the detriment of Pakatan Rakyat, especially as, you know, a lot of analysts have said over time that the younger voters coming into the game often, more often than not, vote for the federal opposition, you know. And so that's, you know, so those are the conspiracy theories.
The Undi Rosa thing, yeah.
Now we turn to the head of the youth section of Party Socialist Malaysia, Khalid Ismath, and asked him about his experience. In fact, we asked him, because he has all this experience with young people, we asked him, do many of them agree with this idea of boycotting the upcoming elections and what their justification for doing so is?
Actually, this spoil vote movement is started by my old friend also, actually. They are from the activist ground. In my circle, especially activist circle, yes, I found many of them this time choose to not participate in the election, including to join to give votes, while part of them will go to vote, but to just spoil it during the voting day. So the reason why they choose this, I think from what I understand based on my chit-chat with them, my discussion, even in the formal program like forum or talk, right? They just don't feel satisfied with what has been done by Pakatan, actually. They are even longer before they have rejected Barisan Nasional. They hope something from Pakatan. But after two terms, Pakatan still fail to walk the talk, like what has been promised before, right? Do you think the youth will still put their hope on Pakatan? Of course, no. They are already unhappy with DN, but they still put their hope on Pakatan. But after two terms, Pakatan just behave almost the same like Barisan Nasional. So that's why there is no any other alternative way for them rather than to express their dissatisfaction by spoil the vote.
So we asked Khalid if he agrees with this movement to spoil votes.
If me, myself, I can say I'm not agree with it, but I can't say I disagree with it also. Because I know there is no alternative for the youth to choose who's the next ruling party which can run the state and government. I feel like I want to spoil the vote too, but, you know, it is a party consensus, which is we still need to go down to vote. This is the only way for us to show our, to express our hopes and our dissatisfaction against current government. For the normal people like us, we have no choice other than give both sides this kind of lesson so that they're aware that the people are no longer loved or liked like it used to happen before in the last election.
And finally, we asked him if he would, what he would say to someone who's planning to spoil their vote or abstain from voting in the upcoming general election.
Of course, we can't control them from showing their expression. We can't even block them. So what can I say is, it is their right. It is their right to practice, as long as it is not against the law. So it is their right to vote or not to vote or even to spoil the vote. But maybe they can try to build up a collective, regather all the groups from different backgrounds, like what they're doing now, you know, unite in spoiling votes movement and build this mess by educating them and move this movement to fight the system followed by both parties and show to the country, show to the people what is the system that they want. Give us the alternative at least.
That was Party Socialist Youth Chief Khalid Ismath. Now, how do we understand something? There's a lot of that that's in there, especially his statement. He says, well, I disagree with it, but I can't say it. Well, I agree with it, but I also don't disagree,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So what's happening there? It seems to me that, you know, there's a very famous saying, you know, Joyce, pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. It comes from an Italian philosopher, you know, politician, Antonio Gramsci, where he talks about this kind of dual attitude. So, yeah, okay, things are not the best. They're not perfect, right? So there's the pessimism. But the optimism comes from saying that in acting in the world that you need to act in a positive way, that you need to move forward. So, you know, so it's a kind of a dual movement.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
But don't they have to choose, though? Or they're saying they don't have a choice. So basically, they're not going to choose.
Well, I think what Khalid is saying is that in order to make any kind of movement forward, you have to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to act
yes.
positively in the world. In that sense, you have to act with an attitude perhaps of optimism.
Mm-hmm.
But you also recognize that there are problems. And I think that's what he's saying. He says the youth who act, and this I think is specifically activists who have turned away from Pakatan, have done so because they felt the Pakatan haven't done their job. They haven't walked the talk.
Mm.
I think that was a very telling expression. And not many of us, you know, are critical both of the ruling government, but we're all, you know, at the state or federal levels, are also with the opposition, feeling that they're not lived up to their promises. And
mm.
because politicians tend to make a lot of promises,
don't
they?
Before the elections, yes.
You You know, so then where do you go? I mean, do you say, well, they're not perfect? And, you know, there's another expression, you know, not to mistake, you know, the good for, you know, not to kind of deny the good because you want the perfect. And so the question is, you know, is there a practical way forward? But, you know, because there are global trends when it comes to issues like participation in the democratic process,
yes,
isn't there?
Yes, sure. So voter turnout is dropping dramatically in the free world. According to World Bank's 2017 World Development Report, election turnout is declining across the world. So over the last 25 years, the average global turnout rate dropped by more than 10%.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've had this, you know, stats for some time now, but especially in mature democracies, a lot of people do not opt out of the system, partly because there's a kind of policy convergence, you know. Political parties on the spectrum, actually, the spectrum is quite narrow. They tend to converge to the center. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the difference between the parties might not be one of substance. It might be one of style or personalities.
But for us, I think there are a lot of new voters coming on stream this coming elections, right? Over a million of them, new voters have signed up. And if you haven't signed up yet, you should. I mean, those who have
Yeah,
not
you
signed
can still
up,
register. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we don't know when the election's going to be. So,
yeah.
You know, if you haven't registered, please do so.
Yeah. And do you know, there's other stats, Sharad, that Malaysian elections traditionally have a lower number of spoilt votes. And given the track record, I mean, this, what, Undi Rosak thing, I'm not sure how that will take off, because the first GE in 1959 to the last one in 2013, spoilt votes made up less than 5% of ballot cast.
Fascinating. We also have a tweet from Roberto Cajea. He says, if politicians really listened that more voters disagree with both sides of the political divide, spoiling the vote is useful. However, in certain systems, it just does not work. Mm. Also, John says, vote the lesser of two evils.
Okay.
That's
We're going to be talking more about Undi Rosak later on, right?
We are. In fact, after the 8:30 news, we will have Sharizan Johan, a constitutional lawyer, and also Mariam Lee to give us a sense of the debates that are happening, especially among young people. Mm. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.